Are you looking for a last-minute Christmas gift? Reformation Gear has produced a new Martin Luther plush figure featuring the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com.
Christ's birth, like this tree, is a reminder that God is always with us. We may neglect him, we may reject him, but he never forsakes us.
The New York-based and Washington-based, too, probably media powerhouses, don't quite get religion. We don't get the role of religion in people's lives.
The colors of the rainbow went from blue on one edge of the rainbow to red on the other. And they saw in that a reminder that just as God once destroyed the world with water, he will again destroy the world, this time by fire.
Uber drivers around the world love listening to Issues Etc. on demand while we're waiting for a ride request.
Well, typical of most of the media coverage of matters religious lately, especially what you can't blame them during a presidential season, it's going to be this way. The Washington Post has a headline that is you don't usually read in the Washington Post just because it's more urban and because its focus is not so often on the church but on politics. Some evangelicals question whether they have overlooked the rural church, some head-scratching, soul-searching among evangelicals, of course, after the presidential election. But the rural church, I've always thought of the rural church as the backbone of the church in America. Well, and that's because, largely, my denomination, if you look at where the congregations are gathered, they're right down the middle of the country. On either side, probably within 200 miles of the Mississippi as it runs down the backbone of the country, that's where most of the congregations, Lutheran congregations of my denomination, exist. That makes them largely rural, although there's some urban churches. What's the biggest myth about the rural church? We're going to be talking about that with Pastor Todd Kolbaum, LCMS Director of Rural and Small Town Mission, on this Thursday afternoon, December the 15th. Joy Pullman will join us after that. We're going to spend some time with her talking about abortion and the option to adopt. Carol Tobias is with us. There's a new study on the effects of abortion on women's mental health. Now, a lot are saying has no effect on it, not a negative effect on women's mental health. Is that true? We'll talk gender equality with Suzanne Venker, and then it's Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Psalm 24. That's the psalm that closes the Advent season. It is, I say, the essential Advent psalm. We'll talk about it with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer in the last part of Issues Etc. You can join us with questions or comments over the next 2 hours of the program. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Or for our on-demand listeners, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about a Washington Post story about rural churches, Pastor Todd Kolbaum, Director of LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission. Pastor Kolbaum, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Good to be on with you today.
Were you pleasantly surprised that a major metropolitan publication like the Washington Post, a national newspaper, is reporting on rural churches?
Somewhat shocked when I saw the article. I have to say that rural and small town congregations very rarely get much of a spotlight. So it was nice to see at least there was something out there.
So let's talk just definitions here. I think when most people think rural church, what they picture is that poster, that white framed, white steepled church that sits out of the middle of a cornfield someplace with a gravel parking lot. But that's a kind of a narrow definition of a rural congregation, isn't it?
Most assuredly. And of course, we use the white frame church out in the middle of a cornfield as our own label, but that's and I think that because that connects with so many folks. But really, the rural and small town congregations, by definition, a rural and small town, by definition of the census, is anything 15,000 or less, which to most of our constituency is a fairly major metropolitan area compared to where a lot of our congregations sit, but 15,000 or less, and you mix in there, then the economy is basically agrarian or some sort of extraction industry. You also have situations where there are somewhat larger communities that have become part of a more metropolitan area, which still have a rural or a small town feel because they were somewhat enveloped by encroachment of the urban area. And then, of course, you have the church out in the middle of two cornfields.
Okay. The Washington Post story on rural churches and evangelicalism focus mostly on kind of the politics that is associated with a rural setting and evangelical churches there. But it's more than politics, too. There does tend to be a different flavor to a rural congregation. You might say maybe a slower pace, but people in the heartland of America do tend to think in more basic and concrete terms, not less sophisticated, but they tend to kind of understand life in its more basic terms. Talk about that.
Well, I think the article itself, is, as you stated, did talk a lot, a fair amount in the middle of the article about the politics involved. And you definitely got the feel reading that article that the concept, and you heard a lot about this during the political campaign, that there was sort of a rural dumbness, if you could use that sort of a descriptor. That rural areas were slower, not as intelligent, and as you said, they are certainly as sophisticated as any other, but I think there's a general appeal towards that kind of mindset because of the slower pace, because of folks tend to be rather set. They are far less fluid in their way of thinking. They're far less fluid in their decision-making, and so that kind of concept is pretty easily adopted by folks who aren't really part of that community. Now, you take then, for instance, the situation that the article is talking about and the ignoring of the rural church by evangelical leadership, and you can see where this would play into that very easily, because the idea that, well, they're out there, they're doing their own thing, we need to be where it's hip and cool, and that's where all the action is. And so that set up a kind of a bad and false dichotomy, because the folks in rural simply are, like you said, they are as sophisticated. Yes, do they tend to be a little more set in their ways? Of course, but I think that's because they have deliberated through things, and they're not coming along with every whim. So when something new comes along, they are going to take time and evaluate it before they jump on that bandwagon.
My experience in serving my entire ministry in rural small town congregations is, usually the term is salt of the earth, but I think it's far better to say common sense seems to prevail. When you live in a small town, even one that's close to a big metropolitan area like the one I serve now, when you live in a small town, things, the basic things of life just matter to you a little better, and the community matters because there's not this huge buffer of people around you all the time. Talk about that.
I think that's exactly right, and I don't know where the quote comes from, but a friend of mine several years ago talked about a quote that every generation away from the farm, that our existence becomes, the people become less intelligent. And I think that maybe you could substitute, have a far less lower common sense quotient, and you're exactly right, because in rural America and in small towns, you know where everything comes from. You understand what goes through the process of feeding the world. You understand how the economy works on its very essential level, where the farmer puts the seed in the ground and the Lord brings about the growth. There is nothing the farmer can do other than tend the farm that makes that seed grow. And so on a very fundamental level, they're still connected to that. And because of that connection to what really essentially keeps us going, I think you have a far better sense of how life works and the value of life. Whereas when your community is somewhat finite and in many places depleting in numbers, you have a sense that what we have is precious, and we want to try to keep that.
It's not an idyllic life by any means whatsoever. The county, the rural county in which I live, is kind of the meth and heroin capital of Southern Illinois. It's a sad thing, but it's tragic, but it is true. It's not as though these rural congregations don't face genuine problems, even those listed among Washington Post's assessment: job loss, mortality rate, increasing poverty. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a very fair assessment, and unfortunately, there's a sense, you kind of set up this dichotomy. Most of the folks in our rural areas, if you would ask them about their community, they're going to tell you a story or paint you a picture that's about 40 years old generally, because that's sort of the last time it was better. However, they're also acutely aware of what's going on. I just, of all people, Steve Shave, who's the director of Urban Mission, sent me a link to an article that I had not seen, a rural health study, and saying that the number of newborns diagnosed with basically drug addiction, drug withdrawal in birth is up an insane amount, 80% higher number of these diagnosed newborns in rural areas than in urban areas right now. In 2012, according to this article, the number of women, pregnant women who are using opiates was 70% higher, again, than urban counties. And so what's going on? The opiate use, the illegal use of prescription drugs, the use of methamphetamine, it's rampant in the rural areas because there is far less presence of law enforcement. You can get away from people and be anonymous. And so it's going on out there. So they're facing a lot of the same issues without the resources to handle them as would be in a more urban or suburban area.
There certainly are some large and heavily staffed rural and small town churches. That certainly, but the norm probably is one pastor doing everything. Talk about the difference of the rural and small town pastor.
Well, he really must be a jack of all trades because, and this is, we just had a group of seminarians out from Fort Wayne to do a rural seminary and immersion where we take them out to the farm. We took them to several different farms to show them different styles and things that are going on. But the main point we were trying to tell these guys is when you get out, if you're called, and over half of our congregations in the LCMS are rural small town, over half of the membership of the LCMS is rural and small town. Over half of our calls, on average, new calls out of the seminaries are about 50% rural, small town. And so we're telling these guys, listen, you need to be a jack of all trades. You don't have to be a master of everything, but you're going to be involved in a little bit of everything. So you need to understand farm life. You need to understand the rhythm of the seasons. You need to understand planting and harvest. It's just part and parcel with that. You're not going to specialize in youth. You're not going to specialize in older adult. You will be the specialist for all those different things. Now, you may have volunteer servants who say, I would like to do this, but you are still going to be where the buck stops.
You know what I loved about that when I was full-time pastoral ministry in a rural congregation, and someone helped me appreciate it from day one. So it was always a great benefit to me for the decade there was that in that setting, although there were a lot of demands, in that setting, there was an opportunity for me as the pastor to know everyone's name, to know their family's names, to know their pets' names, to actually interact with their families in a way that simply couldn't happen if it was a suburban congregation, and to be involved in their lives in a way that made the ministry there not just a joy for me, but much, much more effective. Talk about that.
Well, and I think and it's not just your congregation, but you have an opportunity to do that with your entire community. And not only is it an opportunity for you, it's somewhat of an expectation that you'll know all those things. And it's such a joy that you have the opportunity to know and to get to know. And while it can be a great burden as well, because you do get so integrally involved in these people's lives, you also can minister to them in ways that I think they're having that relationship with them. There's no better way to be able to minister to these folks. and bring them the gospel, certainly applying the law where it's necessary and right, and bringing them the gospel, then letting it permeate through your, not just your ministry and your preaching, but all those different places where you have an opportunity to touch the lives of the folks that are around you. And you're right. You just, in a larger setting, you just don't have that opportunity. And to see how the interplay happens between your church and the community, and the presence that that congregation can be in a community can be so much further amplified by the activities of that pastor, who keeps that in mind.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, in light of the Washington Post casting some journalistic light on rural and small town congregations, what do you think the biggest myth that still persists about them is?
I think that probably the biggest myth right now is the question that I hear all the time. Why are we keeping them open? As if there were no relevance for the rural church. You've got 60 million people in the United States. 20% of them live in rural and small-town areas. Those folks need to hear the gospel. And so that myth of irrelevance is simply just not true.
We'll come back and talk a little bit more with Pastor Todd Kohlbaum, director of LCMS Rural and Small-Town Mission, about the Washington Post story about rural churches and rural and small-town congregations. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Educated in a small town, taught to fear Jesus in a small town. Used to daydream.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Todd Kohlbaum is our guest director of LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission. We're talking about a Washington Post story about rural and small town churches. One of the things that was observed in the Washington Post story from Anthony Bradley, a professor at King's College in New York, he said that evangelicals have intentionally tribalized by class and by educational pedigree. I just saw something this morning, in fact, that talking about small town evangelicals, only 35% of them have a secondary degree, something like that. Bradley goes on to say, some of the people we think of as evangelical leaders are completely out of touch with the sorts of fears and issues of people who live in rural America. It's simply a fact, Todd, that leaders in evangelicalism or in our denomination, they have advanced degrees. They live in big cities or the suburbs. Are they, in fact, out of touch a little bit?
I think perhaps by choice. Certainly in the article, the leaders, the evangelical leaders, talked about how they were chasing after the new and hip and cool model, and that's where that needed to be for church planning in the urban-suburban areas. I think for the history of our church, especially in the United States, certainly one of, if not the most educated person in a community, in a rural and small town area, was often the pastor. And that was looked upon as a good thing. And I think somewhere along the line, we've lost touch with that. However, I think there's also a misconception that comes along with it, in that the uneducated rural areas, and really, when I go around and I'm working with farmers in many different places in the United States, you know, we've got farmers with advanced degrees. We've got farmers. It takes one, really, almost, to be a farmer anymore. And so I think the disconnect has come more out of a sense that the rural folks kind of had their stuff together, and they were going to take care of their own, and we don't need to worry about them. And I think that over time, that divide grew, and as the situation in the rural areas somewhat declined, although there's certainly some data that's showing us a big upstart in folks returning to rural areas, I think, as things started to move differently. And I think really that probably started in the mid to late 80s after the farm crisis, when you saw the view of farming change, how it looked. I think, by and large, the self-sufficiency or the resources available to the rural and small-town congregation started to dwindle. They needed more help. Certainly weren't going to ask for it, and nobody was out there saying, hey, recognizing, hey, we need to go help these folks out.
Here's the end of the story from a pastor in Kentucky. He says, rural evangelicals were, and this is talking about the political season, they were aggravated by elite Americans whom they viewed as already abandoned small-town values of faith, individual freedoms. Quote, their pro-gun position was presented as sinister, their pro-life values portrayed as being anti-woman. Spandal Davidson said, the desire to run a business in line with their religious convictions is reported as bigotry. The overall message they received was like, we're progressive, you're regressive, we're moving forward, and we're leaving you behind. He said, small town America said no. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. I really do. I think, unfortunately, in a lot of our rural small-town areas, they simply don't know how self-sufficient they can, again, be, at least from a congregational standpoint. I think communities are starting to recognize that, and we're seeing a pushback. I think we're seeing that, hey, we're not going to come along with every wind and wave that comes our way. We're going to stay staunchly who we are, and that's not a bad thing. And from coast to coast, north to south, I think we're seeing far more of that. And it's an opportunity for the church in those communities to hold fast to what is true and right. And especially within the LCMS, we have an opportunity to take advantage of that pushback and say, hey, now we've got the good news that goes along with that. And that's why we want to support those congregations, so that they position themselves in such a way to take advantage of perhaps this resurgence of rural and small town presence.
The Washington Post story also quotes from Pastor Timothy Keller, who's of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York. Not a rural area, but he used to be a rural congregation pastor. And he said that young pastors could learn quite a bit by starting at a small town church in rural America. Do you think both pastors and congregations that are not rural can learn something from rural and small town congregations?
Oh, absolutely. If nothing else, just what we talked about before, the fact that you can't just specialize and isolate yourself into one sort of mode of thinking, but that you kind of need to be the Pauline everything to everybody. And I think there's an opportunity there because you don't have all the help. You don't have all the staff. You don't have these big boards that are taking care of and making decisions. You have the grassroots movement all the time because that's all there is. I think there's a great way to learn and to grow in that setting and to take the staunchness of that congregation and its members then to other places. And I preach this left and right, especially as I'm talking to new pastors. Don't view this rural and small town call as your initial call until you get your real call. This is the real call. This is where God is putting you to grow you as the pastor he wants you to be. And maybe he's going to keep you there for a long, long time. Maybe he won't. That remains to be seen. But you have so much to learn in this rural place, how to be self-sufficient, how to be everything to everybody, and how to bring the gospel along in the Word of God to so many different facets of life.
You talked earlier about that question, you know, why are we keeping rural and small town congregations open? And in the background of that question are dollar signs. Is that, in fact, the biggest challenge of the rural and small town congregation?
Yes and no. I think in some places it certainly is. However, I think a lot of our rural and small town congregations are now starting to recognize that they may have to be a little more creative. In many places, the money is there. We've just done a very poor job of educating our folks on stewardship, and biblical illiteracy is you know, has us by the throat in that regard. The other side of that is certainly, you know, demographics do play a role, and as our congregations grow older and somewhat smaller, of course, finances are going to be an issue. However, there are ways to partner with other congregations. There are ways to, and I'm not talking about old models of dual parish or tri-parish or any multi-point kind of situation. We're talking about true partnerships where our first and foremost goal is the mission and ministry to our community and the members of our congregation, and then finances come along, rather than what we have typically done is take the opposite approach, and we've said, okay, what do our finances afford us, and let's figure out something from there. And then you're always chasing after the dollars rather than the ministry that the Lord has equipped you to do.
Before we let you go, what can you tell us about LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission?
Well, we're here to provide resources, training, and support for our 3,700-plus rural and small-town congregations. We like I said, we just had a rural seminarian immersion where I've done work with the seminarians. I'll actually be going out again after the first of the year, and we're helping folks through what we call our Engaging Your Community events, where we basically do some strategic planning and some looking at the resources of the congregation, what has the Lord equipped them with, and what has He put around them. So what's available for them to do ministry-wise and mission-wise, taking a look at demographics and finances and change and all of those factors. Then we also have Engaging the Wandering, where we're looking at how can we reach out to those folks who have wandered away from the church, and where is the role of the local congregation, rural and small-town congregation, in a very unique fashion because everyone is so interrelated in the rural and small-town areas. How can we broach that very delicate subject and be, I hate to use the word effective, but be intentional in the way we reach out to those folks who have wandered away from the faith. Of course, we have our national conference. We have webinars every month. We try to get everything we can out there so that the folks can take advantage of the resources that are available. And we're always looking at creating new resources so that we can help congregations fulfill the call that they have.
Folks, you can find out more about LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Todd Kolbaum is director of LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission. Todd, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
On the other side of this break, Joy Pullman's going to join us. A really, really interesting response that came on The View from George Stephanopoulos' wife. Well, she told the story, but it came from his 14-year-old daughter. Her response to Trump's election was, well, it says a lot about what we're saying to young women about childbearing, about abortion, and about adoption. We'll hear that next.
our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Metro East Lutheran High School of Edwardsville, Illinois presents Journey to the Manger, an interactive Christmas experience.
Bring your family and friends to experience a wonderful reenactment of the Christmas story.
There will be live music and a cookie sale.
Journey to the Manger is from 5 to 8 p.m. on December 23rd. Allow yourself at least 30 minutes to make your way through the entire Christmas story.
Free will donations of $25 or more will receive a free handcrafted gift.
Come to Journey to the Manger for an evening of fun, fellowship,
and the celebration of the true reason for the season.
For any questions, call 618-656-0043. Merry Christmas!
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri, the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California, St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.